Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Thank Godzilla. It's Friday. It is Friday. And you know what that means. That's right. That means it's Godzilla. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. I write for The Wrap, and, well, everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a critic. I contribute to Slash Film. I write about Godzilla over there.
Yes, you do.
Every once in a while.
Yes.
When fortune smiles. Been doing a lot because there's been a lot of Godzilla. There were two Godzilla films.
In rapid succession.
They came out within like 3 months of each other, and that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, and they were both big deal movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one of them won an Oscar. And we're going to be getting to those movies pretty soon, but we're not there yet. No, this is our Godzilla podcast here at the Critically Acclaimed Network. We've been reviewing every Godzilla and Godzilla-adjacent movie, and boy howdy, are we in the final stretch.
Yeah, we are on our antepenultimate episode.
Yes, you're, the Abby Singer is the second...
Abby Singer?
Yeah, you know, the Abby Singer. It's like the second to last shot on the set.
Oh, I don't know what that's called.
Oh, I used to have all that memorized.
Yeah, the martini is the last shot.
The martini is the last shot. I think the Abby Singer is the second to last shot. I think there's one before that. But I don't know.
Abby Singer? I don't even know who that is.
I think I did once.
But one's the Abby Van Buren, one's the Ann Landers.
Hold on. Abby.
Those are some references that I'm sure our listeners will definitely know.
Abby Singer on a film set. The Abby Singer shot is the second to last shot of the day, named after famed production manager Abby Singer.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good Jeopardy question
right
there. That
is a very good Jeopardy question right there. So, boom, we've all learned a little something, and it wasn't even something about Godzilla. But in any case, this is our anti-Abby Singer. It's got to be another word. Whatever. Anyway.
A-N-T-E. We're not anti-Abby Singer.
Right? So, just so we're clear. Yeah. We got 3 episodes left, including this one. And this is a fun one. We've been building up to this for a while because it is the rematch of the millennium. It is Godzilla versus Kong. We previously had King Kong versus Godzilla.
That's right.
Back in the 1960s. And it was one of the first Godzilla movies, actually.
It was the third Godzilla film. Yeah. King Kong versus Godzilla.
Wasn't the first third episode of the show because we covered some of the other monsters that had we're going to tie in later.
Yeah, there was the original Gojira. Mm-hmm. Then there was Godzilla Raids Again, which was like made in 4 months. Like they just churned that thing out.
Oh yeah, really cranked it.
And then Toho pivoted and started making this long series of other monster films. Yeah. And it wouldn't be until 1962 that King Kong versus Godzilla came out. In the interim, we had Rodan. Mm-hmm. There was the Mysterians. Mm-hmm. We did Varan the Unbelievable.
Yeah. And Mothra.
And we did Mothra.
Yeah, and we also had a separate episode just about the American cut of Godzilla.
That's right.
So that was, it was our 8th episode.
Wasn't Atragon in there as well?
Atragon was later. We did Atragon. Atragon was number 9. They both came out in the early 60s. Atragon was the episode after King Kong versus Godzilla. Okay. But if you'll recall, the original film, which was King Kong versus Godzilla, because at the time, King Kong had the legacy. King Kong was kind of the hero. Godzilla was still the villain in Godzilla stories.
Yeah.
And that had a really bizarre path from the idea to the screen. It was originally supposed to be like a kind of like a King Kong versus Frankenstein kind of thing.
Yeah, Toho, I think, was already, like, trying to make a Frankenstein film. Mm. And they were going to have a giant Frankenstein film, which they ended up doing. There was a Frankenstein Conquers the World, and then there was War of the Gargantuas.
Yes.
Which are both excellent, by the way.
To varying degrees,
War of the Gargantuas is pretty special.
Lemons, wait. You got to see them. Yeah. They're pretty wild. Yeah. They're pretty wild films, yeah.
That production got a little bit stymied. I don't remember the exact details, but that ended
up... We did a whole episode about it if you want to hear all the details. Yeah, we remembered it off
the top. And the producers of King Kong said, hey, why don't we do this with an American production? Toho said no. But then they said, well, we'll do it. We'll do a King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
At Toho Studios. We'll make it in Japan.
Yeah, so they
The script of the giant Frankenstein, and they just sort of repurposed it a little bit to include King Kong instead.
Kinda, yeah. So we ended up getting this very odd film. It wasn't in continuity with the previous King Kong movies. It was its own unique thing. And it's a hoot. It's a weird flick in a lot of ways. Has a lot of really memorable images, some of which end up in Godzilla vs. Kong, like when they have to airlift King Kong.
Yeah.
That was from King Kong vs. Godzilla. There's a great... and also a moment that's kind of revisited in this film as well, where I think it's Godzilla shoves a tree in King Kong's mouth or vice versa.
King Kong shoves a tree in Godzilla's mouth.
Yes, and so Godzilla does the same thing in...
King Kong does it to Godzilla again. King Kong does
the same thing in this one, in this movie, but this time it's a bone. It's a giant bone. But so the people who made the film, they did their research. But if you'll recall, in that film, there was a clear victor.
Uh-huh.
It was King Kong. And there was, again... King Kong
stomped Godzilla into the ground.
Mm-hmm, into oblivion, practically. And then he wandered off into the ocean to go on his merry way and to end up in King Kong Escapes... which was a King Kong solo adventure where he fought his own Mecha Godzilla version of himself called Mechanic Kong. And that movie's great. That movie's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen that movie, you should. But again, King Kong won. King Kong was the hero of that story. And as we discussed in that episode, there was a rumor for many years that in the American cut, King Kong won. Mm-hmm. But in the overseas cut, Godzilla won. And that was a lie. There was never a cut where King Kong lost that movie. So, the rematch is on. And the question is, now that Godzilla, who is kind of... Like, we've had Kong Skull Island, but we've had two Godzilla movies. Godzilla has not been introduced as the villain in this franchise. So, really, either of them could win, depending on how the script turns out. And it's a Freddy versus Jason type situation. They're going to fight multiple times over the course of the film, sometimes on Kong's turf, sometimes on Godzilla's turf. There'll be definite bouts where one wins and the other one wins, but at the end, a decision is made.
And this is a little different from the Toho films that all have verses in the title, where there's like sort of a villain of the week and Godzilla will fight them, because by the time we got to that era, Godzilla was pretty much the hero of the picture.
Yeah. Some monster is starting some shit. Godzilla hears about it from Monster Island and walks around and gets there and kicks the shit out of him, and that's the movie.
And that was, when Godzilla was building a reputation. It wasn't about sort of appeasing a pre-existing generations-long fan base.
No, it was still this generation's film.
Freddy v. Jason and, Alien v. Predator were movies that... included the kind of fight scenes that fans wanted to see, even if the stories were a little weak. I feel like Freddy v. Jason was actually kind of an okay movie.
It's pretty good. They're two characters that really don't make a lot of sense to team up together, because one is in the real world, one is in dreams.
Yeah.
And considering how contrived you have to make the story in order to get them to fight in the first place, I think they did a pretty noble job.
Yeah.
And that's a really satisfying fan service movie in a lot of ways.
But the point was, you're going to want to watch them fight. You're going to watch them just do violence to each other, these two violent creatures.
You don't want to watch them just like have a cup of coffee and talk about their day. You want to see who would win in a fight.
And it is written from the perspective of people who are getting high and postulating ideas as to how these two characters would fight.
Yeah.
Like just in a physical altercation. And
if you've ever been wasted at 2 a.m. at a Denny's,
this is the movie for you. Who would win in a fight, man? And then, are they in the dream world and in the real world? The movie gives us both.
Does Jason have prep time?
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's exactly. There's a fight in the dream world, and Freddy is superior there. And then Freddy gets yanked out into the waking world, and they fight there as well.
And Jason has the advantage in the real world. Bada bing, bada boom. And it's actually a very clever film, and it's very, very satisfying in a lot of ways.
And then, like, Alien versus Predator. What's the plot? Who cares? There's an underground Mayan temple that shifts around. The point is, there's a Predator down there, and there's aliens down there. And they're going to fight in this weird, exotic location. You get to see various combinations of various creatures fighting each other.
And, but that one's not as good.
It's not as good because it's not as
satisfying.
It's not as violent. I think.
I think they were aiming for a PG-13.
Tried to make a PG-13 film. And they didn't cut it down. They made it that way.
Yeah, and it just. I mean it just doesn't. It doesn't give you everything you want. It doesn't give you all the
terms
cool
of,
stuff.
In terms of the fight stuff, it kind of does. It just does it sloppily.
That's my point. I don't want it sloppy. I wanted it cool. I don't want it crap. Like, it's not as bad as Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
Yeah.
Which is bad.
That's like a truly abysmal film. Like, it's really, really awful.
It's
like
literally
a zero-star movie.
It's literally hard to watch. And I don't mean like, oh, what a train wreck. I mean, it's one of the most dimly lit movies I've ever seen in my life.
You can't see a lot of the monster stuff.
I don't know what the fuck. Like, they really overdid it. Maybe they thought they were sparing us. I don't know. But it's not a good film.
But I feel like this new film, Godzilla versus Kong.
Right.
Is pulling that shtick. It's how can we match up these monsters?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they going to fight? How are they going to fight? How do we orchestrate? They're thinking of the fight scenes first, and then backward engineering a film around it.
Right. And I'm fine with that. Yeah. In this case, and honestly, Hitchcock used to work that way. He would come up with set pieces and work a movie around them. That's how North by Northwest came together. He would just what would be cool? What if a guy was like chased by like a crop dusting plane in the middle of nowhere and there was nowhere for him to hide?
Mm.
Awesome. Okay, how do we fit that in? Boom. He came up with sequences and worked the movie around it. That can work. You just have to really put in the effort.
Yeah, and I feel like Adam Wingard did his homework.
Yes.
Adam Wingard, this is his first film in this series. The previous one was done by, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Mm-hmm. Was Michael Dougherty.
Michael Dougherty, who has done some great films, but I don't think that's one of them.
Yeah.
The first film in this, or no, I guess Kong Skull Island was before that.
Yeah.
And that was Jordan Vogt Roberts, and I liked Kong Skull Island.
It's a good movie, actually.
Better than I did the first time.
Yeah, it holds up really good.
And then there was Gareth Edwards' original Kong, Godzilla. God, I keep mixing them up.
We've gone through so many Godzilla, Kong, and other monster movies that our brains are mush now.
Although I was able to like call up Atragon and kind of remember where it fell in the continuity.
That's fair, I suppose.
But yeah, I feel like we've been complaining a lot about how the MonsterVerse movies weren't able to figure out what they wanted to do.
Yeah,
the first one was let's make a really somber Godzilla film.
Yeah.
Really slowly paced.
Kind of a post 9/11 Godzilla movie. Yeah.
Where Godzilla is just the sort of slow walking disaster, but we're all like trying to run and hide from this Godzilla.
Yeah.
But the 9/11 metaphor like isn't explicit, and I think it's unintentional on the filmmaker's parts, if it's there at all.
I don't know if it's intentionally a 9/11 metaphor so much as in the wake of 9/11. Kind of disaster movies, the kind of big, the kind of epic movies we had. Yeah. It wasn't so much like, hey, they blew up the White House, isn't that fun, and Independence Day. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, oh shit, that's actually really tragic. And I think just the tone of that kind of devastation was kind of set in cinema for about 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. And I think Godzilla, the legendary MonsterVerse Godzilla, was kind of at the tail end of that, where we felt like we had to approach mayhem with gravitas.
Yeah,
and by the time we hit Godzilla versus Kong, they're just pounding through buildings and no one gives a shit.
No one cares anymore. Yeah. Well, and also a big part of it was the monster verse. This is another attempt to create an interconnected cinematic universe because Marvel was so successful with it.
Although technically the monster verse did it first. The original Toho MonsterVerse.
Oh, absolutely.
Monsters,
yeah, absolutely.
They're playing fair here.
But, precedent. It was a big trend, a big successful trend in America since at least 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of other studios tried to do the same thing or announced they were going to do some things. I think we just recently had the 7th anniversary of the Dark Universe.
Yeah.
Which got one film in before it fell over.
Yeah, that was hilarious. They really put the horse before the cart on
yeah,
that
they,
one.
Yeah, they really thought they were going to do something. I remember they're still trying to announcing like interconnected Ghostbusters films.
Yeah, they're doing like the last TV Ghostbusters film.
They still have that Ghost Corps logo at the front of everything.
Yeah,
it's like what? No,
people aren't really flocking.
We don't care.
They?
Yeah,
yeah.
People didn't want more cinematic universes. They just liked that Marvel was doing it. And Marvel had precedent because they were based on interconnected comic books.
Yeah,
it was already. Set up for them.
Yeah.
And so, Universe, or I guess Warner Brothers now, tried to do Godzilla. And it felt really cynical in 2014 with that Gareth Edwards film. And the fact that the Gareth Edwards film, while tonally very somber and visually very kind of densely packed, didn't feel like it was about anything. It felt really cynical.
Yeah.
And it felt that way. It's felt that way going forward. Like they don't really know what they want these films to be. All they want to know is they want an interconnectivity between them.
Yes.
That's been their only rise on dead.
And some of the interconnectivity has been pretty subtle. They all have like a similarly themed like opening credit sequence with like sort of redacted classified information, tying it into the history, telling as much of the story as possible before the story begins.
I love that it's still redacted. There's giant monsters storming around.
We all fucking know now.
What are you keeping secret at this point?
That's the real question, isn't it? I think they mentioned it like kind of briefly in. I think they started mentioning it in Kong Skull Island, but this idea of the Hollow Earth. How is Godzilla getting around the planet so fast? Well, there's this old nonsense scientific theory that the Earth is hollow and underneath it there's like a journey to the center of the Earth kind of magical land full of monsters.
No, please.
Fun premise, but no.
Yeah.
But whatever. If we're going to believe that there's a Godzilla, we might as well believe in a whole bunch of junk. So in this universe, there's a hollow universe. They've been building that up pretty organically, to be fair. They mentioned it and they built it and we're finally going to see it in Godzilla versus Kong. And we've had a little continuity with some of the characters. You know, some of them come in later. Like Joe Morton played an old version of the Corey Hawkins character from Kong Skull Island. So that's cool. All right. But we finally, like after we had Godzilla, which was dour but to no end. Kong Skull Island, which was basically Kong but Apocalypse Now. Not really to much end other than wouldn't that be neat? And you know what? It was.
It's fine.
It's a good movie.
They restaged King Kong as like a metaphor for Vietnam.
Yeah.
Which that part I appreciate.
Worked better than you might think. And then when we came back to Godzilla King of the Monsters, they're like, okay, let's do a big monster mashup, monster fighting movie. And the idea was sound. The script was unusually bad, even for Godzilla movies where that's often secondary. And there are parts that I think are very, very cool. I like the fights more than you did, but they're behind a veil of crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's dark, shadowy.
It's really cloudy. Yeah. It's like difficult. You can't really see the monster fights that clearly. Like snowy fight scene.
They're trying to make it look like all like kind of cinematic and fascinating. And what it really is doing is keeping us from seeing the good stuff. Mm. Adam Wingard, who came from much like Michael Dougherty came from the horror realm. He did Your Next, which is, you know, very well received, sort of horror slasher type movie. The Guest, which you and I are enormously fond of.
That's an excellent movie, The Guest.
I'm not allowed to talk about that movie so much anymore because I had such a close relationship with one of the stars because we were on a Schmodown team together. So I have to kind of abstain from that. But I'm on the record before I even met that guy of fucking loving that movie. It's a lot of fun. Adam Wingard also did a genuinely respectable update of the Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch. Blair Witch was all right.
It was all right, I think, but that's the thing. I think people were just tired of found footage movies by the time that came around, and I don't think people realized that. No, that one's all right.
Well, I think when people would watch the original Blair Witch Project, which came out in 1999, and it was a found footage film, and it was all film cameras that they would carry up on their shoulders.
One of them was video.
Yeah, one was video and one was film because they were shooting a documentary, but also like a video diary at the same time. So we cut back and forth.
Yeah,
and they lost. They got lost in the woods, and they lost their. They threw away the map, and they walked past in a straight line, but they kept
lost
passing
their minds,
the same spot.
They turned on each other, and then eventually they vanished. Well,
yeah, then there was like darkness and they heard weird noises out in the woods. And yeah, then they found this cabin and something weird happened in the cabin. And that's the way the movie ends. And people would watch this and in that kind of like half drunken macho way saying, oh, well, if I were, I'd just go back to those woods, but I'd like bring drones and I'd bring satellite trackers and I would do it right. I'd be like super, be super prepared and I'd be able to walk through the woods and find my way really well. And what Adam Wingard's film said was, none of that shit's going to help you.
Yeah, you're fucked.
You can have drones and tracking and, you know, the Blair Witch is still going to bend reality around you.
Yeah.
It's going to stay dark for, you know, 50 hours at a time. It's, you're going to get a report from the drone that's not accurate. You know, the satellite thing is going to report that you're in several places at once. None of it's going to work.
Yeah.
You can't outsmart the magic of the Blair Witch.
That's true.
And I appreciated that part because it was just a confrontation for all of, like, the asshole audience members from the first movie.
Right.
But apart from that, it wasn't a great horror film.
No, I wouldn't call it a great horror movie, but I think it's better than it gets credit for. My point is that I think Adam Wingard is a very talented director overall. And when he was actually originally approached to do a follow-up to Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Okay.
Which never came together because that movie was somewhat disappointing financially. But now the time has come. He has gotten himself attached to the Legendary Monsterverse, and he gets to do Godzilla vs. Kong, and apparently he immersed himself in the lore. He watched every single Godzilla movie, just like we did, and he had a mandate. He wanted there to be a definitive winner, but he wanted the loser to maintain their dignity.
Okay.
And I think that was a smart play, because you don't want... Because there's fans of Kong, there's fans of Godzilla. I think most people are somewhat fans of both. But usually people have a favorite, and if you want your favorite to win, right? But you don't want your and if your favorite doesn't win, you don't want them to get, like, you know, smashed into oblivion and spit on. You want them to, you know, put in a fight.
Yeah, I think the favorite in this film is clearly Kong. Because Kong is the one that communicates with humans.
Yeah, he's got the emotional journey. He's got a tender side.
Well, also, you know, Kong is an ape. He's a little bit more, he's a hominid now. He's like a little bit more humanoid looking. And Godzilla is like a little bit more like a dinosaur. It's a little bit more of an inscrutable creature.
Well, Godzilla, to the best of my knowledge, has never, correct me if I'm forgetting something, he's never formed a relationship with a person.
Not a one-on-one relationship.
Not like, hey, you and me, we're cool. Like, not really. The closest we had was, like, in one of the Millennium era films where he hated one guy. Like, he really that's not the same thing.
The pilot of the Kiryu came to really respect Godzilla.
Yeah, I just don't know if Godzilla came to respect them too. So much in return. Mechagodzilla came to respect them.
That's because
Mechagodzilla had agency, had like kind of a soul in that one.
A little bit, like it's starting to form a consciousness.
Yeah, but I think Godzilla itself, I don't know if it actually would recognize them again. Whereas King Kong is forming relationships, and in this film, when we meet King Kong,
He's in a holodeck.
What happens is they built an enclosure on Skull Island. My memory of it, and I'm glad I rewatched it, was that they enclosed the entire island. No, that would have been ridiculous. But they did build like a giant dome in Skull Island that would enclose King Kong. And he doesn't like it there. In fact, one of the things
there's a sky projected on this dome.
Yeah.
There's a biome inside. It's like a really complicated zoo for King Kong. And one of the first scenes is he pulls a tree up out of the ground, yanks all of the branches off, turning it into a spear, this giant tree trunk, and throws it into the sky. And the big reveal is it like chunks like into the sky, and the screen breaks, and we learn that it's a fake sky.
But the reason they've done this isn't to be rude or to be cruel or even necessarily to study Kong. They've done this because, as we established firmly in Godzilla King of the Monsters, monsters want to fight.
Yeah,
especially
Godzilla seeks them out and tries to fight them.
Yeah, and especially a genuine threat, an alpha monster. Godzilla doesn't seem to be out hunting all the little monsters unless they start causing some shit. But if there's a King Ghidorah out there, Godzilla will home in on that sucker.
Yeah,
and King Kong, they assume, is an alpha predator in this universe. So they figure if we keep King Kong enclosed here, whatever it is, smell, some kind telepathy.
I think it's some kind of psychic thing.
Telepathy, yeah. Vibes. Just put sense out big vibes. Godzilla won't attack, and Godzilla hasn't been attacking. King Kong, I assume King Kong was in that enclosure throughout all of Godzilla King of the Monsters, and that's why he didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Which really is the only reason why he wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Fine, you explained it away. It's forced, but you explained it away. Knock yourself out. We meet the Jane Goodall of the story, played by, I think, one of the best actors working today, Rebecca Hall.
Uh-huh.
Who does not get to do even remotely her best work in these movies, but get that paycheck.
She's collecting a paycheck, and you know what? She never sleepwalks. You know, she's reading the lines as best she can.
She's doing good. It's just she doesn't have a lot of material, and that's fine.
And she's adopted one of the Iwi, which are the people from Skull Island.
Yes, who we learned, we met them in Kong Skull Island, but we learned that they
got... That was the 1970s, yeah, so lots happened.
They got Alien 3'd. Between movies, all of them died, except for this one little girl. Apparently there was a huge hurricane, and it ravaged the island. So, we'll actually get back to that, but in a future film. Now this little girl, and she's deaf, and this is important to the story, actually, and Rebecca Hall talks to her in sign language. They formed a very close bond. It's not like she's like rejecting Rebecca Hall. Rebecca Hall is effectively her mother.
Has adopted her.
Is it official adopted?
Yeah, it's officially adopted. Yeah.
So they're very close. It's not like a rebellious kid situation. You're not my mom, that kind of thing. No, they love each other very much. And the little girl has developed a close relationship with Kong. They actually know each other well. And the like fist bump, which is kind of cute. Again, Kong's relationship to humanity is very direct. On the other side of the equation, what is Godzilla up to? Well, he's fucking around. And at the beginning of the movie, a podcaster, a conspiracy theory podcaster, played by Brian Tyree Henry, who deserves so much better than this material.
He was asked to be, like, a comic relief character.
Yeah.
Like, a really, like, chattery, obnoxious type.
It's not a very dignified role.
Brian Tyree Henry can do so much better than this, and has.
Yes.
Did you see Causeway?
I didn't. I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, he
was
really, really good at that.
I know he's a brilliant actor. I've seen him in other films. And I'm glad this isn't what he's known for, because it's a thankless role. It's a very thankless role. But he is a paranoid conspiracy theorist podcaster. And at the beginning of the movie, and this is so ridiculous, he's doing his latest podcast, and he's saying, okay, as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, I work for the Apex Corporation. I've infiltrated them in order to do espionage, in order to find out what secret things they are up to, because I think they're up to no good. And today is the day that I'm going to go in there and steal things. Post.
You're saying that on a podcast.
And I appreciate... I guess the implication is that no one listens to this podcast, but his employers would. Like, yeah. If you're... Surely, at some point before... If this is, like, actually, like, a company doing a bunch of top secret stuff, they would keep at least a casual eye on that.
Uh-huh.
But... whatever, this isn't a movie where the plot makes a lot of sense. He's in Hong Kong, and he's investigating. He found some dirt. And all of a sudden, Godzilla attacks Hong Kong. And Godzilla, in this universe, has never just attacked someplace willy-nilly. He's always attacked someplace because there was a monster there. Except this time. And now all the humans are like, oh my god, is Godzilla not our savior anymore? Which... isn't important. They really drop that. Like, it's not like that's a thing. Like, what are we going to do if he isn't? What's our plan? So the Apex Industries, and this movie's plot is way more convoluted than it needs to be. The Apex industry is run by Demian Bashir. Great actor.
Right.
Great actor. He at least gets to have some fun. He and Dr. Sarazawa's son, who has... no backstory whatsoever except for his name. They are working on a secret project, and they think that they can defend humanity from rogue titans, especially if Godzilla indeed turns on us, if they manage to go on an expedition into Hollow Earth and find the energy source inside Hollow Earth that allows Hollow Earth to have light, power, fuels radioactive monsters. And in order to do that, they enlist Dr. Lind, played by Alexander Skarsgård, who believes in Hollow Earth. And everyone's like, oh, he's not credible. And I'm like, we know it's real now. How are we?
Well, we haven't seen it yet. We don't get to see it in this movie.
We know it's real.
They talked about it in dialogue in King of the Monsters, but we haven't seen it.
I think Monarch knows it's real.
They theorize. Like, this is how we have a theory that there's these magic portals that teleport them around the Earth's surface, and they talked about it.
But they also say that his brother died, this Dr. Lin's brother died a few years ago, attempting to travel to Hollow Earth. And it wasn't that he died because it doesn't exist. He died because there was a gravity inversion that takes place where gravity, instead of making you fall towards the surface of the Earth, like it is if you're on the surface, it makes all of a sudden works backwards.
Like repels you up into the sky?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of honestly really hazy, but apparently it killed him. They weren't prepared for it, and it killed him, and so... But that still means they know it exists.
Alexander Skarsgård and Kyle Chandler are in this movie, and they don't look alike. They're very different actors. In this movie, they kind of occupy the same cognitive space. Mm-hmm. That is to say, the boring nothing character that they just kind of crammed into the film.
Yeah,
Kyle doesn't Chandler really has... serve much of a dramatic purpose.
Kyle Chandler is only here to explain why, and we'll get to Maddie in a second, that Millie Bobby Brown is in the movie, but since he's not an adult yet, we do have to explain who's raising her. Yeah. And so Kyle Chandler has like one scene where he says, hey, don't do a bunch of Godzilla stuff. And then a couple of scenes where he's trying to get her on the phone and he can't because she's doing Godzilla stuff. That's it. I'd be surprised if he was on set for more than 2 days.
And they mentioned Vera Farmiga, but she's not in the movie.
Well, she's dead.
Yeah.
So that does make sense. So, where are we going here? So, he enlists this guy. Hey, listen, we're going to go to Hollow Earth. We've invented these cool spacecraft thingies that can go into Hollow Earth and survive the gravity inversion. But we need to know where the energy source is, and we have no idea where that is. And you have a theory that Titans have a genetic memory that, if they went to Hollow Earth, would make them go to a cool energy source. And he's like, yeah, totes. And he's like, well, let's do that. And the guy's like, cool. And so he goes to the King Kong people, because Kong is like the one like tame Titan. And he says, hey, listen, we're going to go to Hollow Earth, and we're going to look for this energy source, and I think Kong can do it.
Kong can lead us there. And
Rebecca Hall says, I don't give a shit. And he's like, yeah, okay, fair enough. But you can't leave him here. He's like fighting against this enclosure. He'll escape, and Godzilla will attack him. If we can get him to Hollow Earth, he'll be safe from Godzilla. So. Even though Godzilla goes to Hollow Earth all the time, apparently. So no, actually, that falls apart on its surface. But whatever, that's the justification they have for getting her to agree to Frank.
Or falls apart far below the surface. Hey! So yeah, they say, okay, fine, we'll take Kong to where we know there's a portal to Hollow Earth.
Which is in Antarctica.
And also, oh, by the way, we have spaceships now.
Yes.
Flying hover... Yeah. Supercraft
made by Damien Bashir's company. That can fly us in.
Hollow Earth, big monsters. We're in a parallel universe where monsters exist.
It's a nonsense universe,
and it's okay for there to be a nonsense universe. It's okay for there to be like monster conspiracy organizations that look after these things.
It's their version of Monster Island.
It's even okay to have like high tech devices that can track monsters. But so far, it's all been monster related. Those ridiculous little hovercraft with the glowing electric wheels on the sides, those are straight out of Star Trek. Those ships are a clear indicator that Adam Wingard has let the wheels come completely off.
I think,
that in a wonderful way.
Well, I think Adam Wingard was like looking at like the Heisei era, which is like, hey, Godzilla is back. I'm going to go back super grounded, and then 2/3 of the way through the reboot Godzilla movie, all of a sudden we have a UFO to fight him.
Yeah,
we're just. Then that's just the thing we happened to have.
Like the Super X3 this time. This one can fire frost blasts.
It's his version of the Super X, basically. Yeah. Except it doesn't have as many weapons.
So I appreciate that it's like, okay, you know what?
Whatever.
We don't need to abide by any sense of reality anymore.
No.
We never did.
Why
were we even trying for as long as we have?
I think what happened was you wanted to have a sense that the world as we knew it was normal, and then monsters showed up. Mm. Fine. But after monsters show up, like, more than twice, normal is out at the window.
There's a new normal now.
And the normal is monsters. Yeah. And you know what? And I'm fine with them embracing that. Mm. They just, they, it's not important anymore. We're not, this isn't a world you recognize. Mm. So that's what we're dealing with. And before we move on to the actual Hollow Earth expedition, which we will get to, what is Millie Bobby Brown up to? Well, she's a teenager now, and she has fallen really far down like the YouTube conspiracy theory rabbit hole. Because she doesn't drink tap water anymore because it controls your brain. Because it has fluoride in it. That old chestnut.
It's presented as very amusing, though, that she's into these weird conspiracy theories.
It's amusing, maybe, but also... And maybe they weren't really conscious of this when the movie was being made. Although, I think by this point it was well documented. Having a young character who has been swayed by conspiracy theorists online who aren't very trustworthy and are kind of weird and creepy... And then her whole subplot is seeking out this one podcaster who bathes in bleach so the government can't track you. That might not be the healthiest thing for your hero in your movie to be doing and for you to make light of. That's kind of actually the actual reality of that pipeline from just scrolling around on the internet to bathing in bleach is dark,
yeah.
I think. And I find it really distracting. But her and, what's the name of the kid from...
Oh, it was the kid from Deadpool 2.
Kid from Deadpool 2 and Hunt for the Wilder People. Hold on, I lost. Julian Dennison.
Yeah.
Julian Dennison is the comic relief to the comic relief. Because we have Brian T. Tyree Henry, but he ostensibly has things to do. Julian Dennison is there because his brother has a van. So he's Millie Bobby Brown's friend. He brings their van. They go on a road trip to track down a creepy online conspiracy theory guy. And then he's like, oh, you teenagers believe in the stuff that I have. And your mom was a terrorist. So let's all go on an adventure together. And I won't even call your dad. Okay.
Look. Didn't I just say we had spaceships?
That's more believable than this.
We were getting away from like reality. We're in like Saturday morning cartoon territory. And this is all echoes of E.T., where the kids get to leave and have their own adventures.
Yeah.
I don't care that they're in danger. The movie doesn't present as if they're in danger. The movie says this is a whimsical, fun thing. And you know what? It's okay for these kids to run off with a conspiracy theorist in this universe, because this is a monster universe where they're all right. They're all correct about the things they predict. They're
correct about fluoride, really?
Not about fluoride, but about fucking monsters and hollow earth and shit. Look, if there's fucking pterodactyls underneath the earth, bleach is the least of your worries.
Here's what it boils down to, though, because honestly, my biggest problem with this movie is that whole Millie Bobby Brown, Julian Dennison, Brian Tyree Henry subplot. Thank you, truck. I don't know if you heard that. There was a lot of truck outside. That whole subplot, you don't need it.
Well, they eventually...
It's really extraneous.
They eventually find the skull, and we'll get to the skull in a minute.
They find a plot point, but it's not something that couldn't have been incorporated in another way. It feels like we're just cutting to these... It's like in the first Transformers movie, where we just keep cutting to, like, this one... I remember she's a reporter or something, and, like, she hangs out with her one hacker friend who's hanging out and playing video games with his buddies and drinking Pepto-Bismol because Pepto-Bismol gave him money. And then it's like, why are we watching you? Well, later on, they'll be in the same room as John Voight. And?
Oh, God.
They have nothing to do with anything. It's just filler, and it's a long enough movie as it is.
I haven't seen that first one.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen all the goddamn sequels.
And that's one of the better ones.
I haven't seen that one, and I haven't seen Bumblebee, but I've seen all the others.
Those are the only two I like.
I've seen all the shitty ones.
Yeah, but I think the real reason why they brought Millie Bobby Brown back, besides the fact that, you know, she's on Stranger Things, she's a pretty big star, is she's the only character in the movie who's on Godzilla's side.
That's fair.
Godzilla saved her.
Kong has a lot of allies. Yeah. Godzilla needs an ally.
When everyone is saying, oh, Godzilla turned on us all, we have to defend ourselves from Godzilla, she's like, no, I think Godzilla deserves the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to investigate and find out. So it's nice that we have that approach. I interviewed her when Godzilla King of the Monsters came out.
Uh-huh.
And I told her, because they were already making Godzilla vs. Kong, and I was like, you're going to pilot Mechagodzilla, aren't you? Because I still think that's the natural extension. Like, how cool would that have been for it actually, like, fight Godzilla or Kong or whatever. And no, she never gets anything cool to do.
No, but Mechagodzilla does show up in this movie.
Yeah.
We'll get to Mechagodzilla in a second. She doesn't get
anything cool to do. It's really sad.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
I'm glad that there is a Mechagodzilla in this film. And yes. That's what allowed Godzilla versus Kong to function, really. It's like, they need a common enemy.
It's a superhero
and
thing.
They already did King Ghidorah in the last film, right. So you need the next best thing, and that's... Well, that's Mechagodzilla. Well, Gigan would have been kind of fun.
Gigan would have been cool. And I think maybe Gigan is the natural extension of what you do next. But the standard superhero rules. How do you when two superheroes meet, you want them to fight, but it's got to be a misunderstanding, and then they have to team up to fight. This is as old as time.
So
now.
Fucking contrived.
It's extremely contrived, but we keep doing it because it works. We want to see these two people who have cool fighting powers in conflict with one another, but we can't have Superman kill Spider-Man.
Why not?
So eventually... Because we're still making money off of Spider-Man. So we have to come up with a reason for them to fight and then a reason for them to stop fighting.
Yeah.
And in this case, the reason is Mechagodzilla.
They fight because that's their natural instinct.
Yeah.
But then they stop fighting so they can team up to fight Mechagodzilla, who they see as a horrendous aberration in the world of monsterdom.
And it kind of is, for reasons that we'll get into when we explain how Mechagodzilla works in this
universe. While they're transporting Kong to that portal we mentioned earlier, Godzilla, of course, perks right up, swims over to it. There's the shot they used in all the trailers of Kong socking Godzilla in the face while they're standing on a bunch of aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
Look, I don't care how sturdy your aircraft carrier is.
Uh-huh.
A monster can't stand on that.
Oh, so this is where you draw the line. This is where all of a sudden realism is important to you in the MonsterVerse.
That's when you notice.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it ruins the film, but... The fact that they can stand up and walk around on top of a bunch of aircraft carriers is a little ridiculous.
I'm okay with them having Godzilla on the aircraft carrier because they clearly did that very, very carefully. When he has when he falls into the ocean...
Kong is, tied up.
Kong is, because they're transporting Kong. He's in chains, but it's more for his protection than anything else, so he doesn't, fall off.
And he's drugs, King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah, this is also where people find out that the girl... What's the name of the Iwi girl again?
Oh, I forgot the name.
Hold on.
The little girl.
The little girl. Hold on. Nope. That's not her name. Hold on. Someone has
Gia.
A name. Gia. Okay.
Gia. Gia.
Gia has not only befriended King Kong, but we learn in this sequence that she has also taught Kong sign language.
Yeah, they can communicate a
little
bit.
So Kong is really becoming more, a character that we can really identify with because we can actually talk to him now. they're transporting Kong. Godzilla shows up, and there's a great sequence where, because Kong is still, chained up, and the boat capsizes, in the Poseidon Adventure, and Kong is drowning, he's underwater, and while Godzilla is trying to fight him, and you know what, all that shit's really cool. That shit's really fucking awesome.
There's an homage to Die Hard
during
the sequence where, Kong sees that something's about to explode on one of the ships and turns around and jumps in slow motion.
Yeah, it's
just
super
great. The shot of Bruce Willis jumping away from an explosion in Die Hard. It's the exact pose.
Well, the cool thing about this sequence is that Godzilla has the definite upper hand. Godzilla is amphibious. Kong is not. Kong actually, he can hold his breath for a long time because he's so huge, but it is a factor, so it keeps him swimming up for air. And when he swims up for air, he puts his arms on the aircraft carrier like you get out of a swimming pool. You
know, pushes himself up on the aircraft.
Yeah, that's the part where I'm like, okay, I was fine with him standing on it, but there's no fucking way that doesn't sink the boat.
Have you ever been in a swimming pool and you try and you grab like a floaty, just like a little inflatable thing? You can't hoist yourself up on top of that thing. You push it down under the water.
It needs to be quite large and heavy for that to actually work. So, whatever. But it's a cool fight.
Kong gets away. They get. They make their way to the portal. Kong jumps in the portal.
Yeah.
They use their spaceships to fly through. And it's a magic wormhole portal. It's not like just a tunnel.
Yeah.
Why is there a magic portal tunnel? Look, we're in Saturday morning.
Because it's cool.
It's cool, I guess. It explains the physics if it's magic.
There you go.
So they go down, and now there's a...
There's a magical land of wondering monsters. Hollow Earth,
where there's a land below you, but also land above you, and that there's somehow sunlight just sort of floating through the air.
Well, that's like the energy source they talked about.
And it looks like Skull Island, and it's full of monsters.
Yeah. King Kong immediately fights a giant flying dragon, and that's pretty cool, actually. And then he, like, when he wins, he pops the head off the dragon like it's a can of Bud Light.
And drinks the green gooey blood inside.
It's a taste of a new generation.
And now we don't have to talk about people anymore, because they don't really matter. The plot of the movie is now Kong's, and Kong kind of remembers something about this land. How old is Kong? Clearly very old.
Yeah.
And Kong works his way into, like, this underground antechamber made of stone, and there's glowing rocks under there.
And statues of apes. Did
the apes carve the statues? Probably. Or maybe not. It finds a throne and a big axe that has clearly been made from a piece of Godzilla.
Yeah, there's a big Godzilla bone, and in the edge of the bone, there is one of Godzilla's, like, dorsal plates, or some other Godzilla's dorsal plates. And that's going to be super important later. The only reason Kong gets that is so that he has a chance against Godzilla, because Godzilla has fire breath.
Yeah.
And that dorsal plate can absorb fire breath, so because comic books were read once. I read a comic book once, so we're just going to do this. This is basically Thor's hammer.
They did that in Alien versus Predator as well. There was a bit where the Predator killed an alien and had befriended a human.
And
used like some weird alien Predator tools to like hollow out the alien's head.
Yeah.
And gave it to the human to, like, strap onto her arm, and she could use that as a shield against the acidic alien blood.
And then he took the alien's tail and used it as a spear.
Yeah, like he made weapons out of the alien's body. I thought that part was pretty neat.
Pretty cool. I'm pretty sure the blood in that alien's head would burn through her arm.
But he had magic predator tools.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about the magic predator tools.
Magic predator tools.
My bad.
Like, it was cleaned out so she could put her arm in safely. She wasn't, like, sticking her head in, like, a goopy, still bloody skull.
At this point, when King Kong is on his throne, they realize that, oh, this is the energy source we're talking about. They built the throne room on it, and stuff starts glowing. And then
Something glows blue, it's, like, infinite energy source.
Yeah. A character that was introduced kind of late, and we haven't really talked about them much, but Damian Bashir's daughter, Maya, who also works at the company.
Aza Gonzalez.
Yeah, she's in the film, and she's kind of like, I don't know about all of this stuff you're doing, and that's kind of her whole character. And then she gets down there, and she takes, like, an energy sample, and, like, this rock sample, and it's glowing. And Rebecca Hall's like, whoa, you can't just take stuff. And I'm like, even I'm like, why? Like, it's a rock. Like, we're gonna... So, she takes it, and I assumed the first time I watched this movie that she would take the rock, get into one of those spaceships, fly it back up to Earth, and hand it to her father, because that's what he was looking for, right? No, because that would take too long. So they put it in a machine, and they scan it, and they send the energy source via email to Damian Bashir, and he's like, oh yeah, no, we can totally replicate this energy source now that we scanned it for a minute. So we're just doing that now. I'm willing to suspend disbelief, but Jesus, that's the best we could do? We couldn't come up with something just a little bit easier to, like, sort of accept and wrap your head around. Luca, I love you so much. Don't knock the microphone, buddy.
There's a few issues I've had with some recent stories, and this is a big issue with, like, the Marvel stories. There's magic widgets that provide infinite energy. Okay, fine. Sure. Magic widget provides infinite energy.
Congratulations, but, Tony Stark. You invented a new element.
Yeah, they don't even give it a name. You invented a new element. Great. So it has an extra neutron. Who cares?
I think they did name it, but who cares? No,
yeah. And you can tell that when something like the Cosmic Cube was invented, that's just a lazy artist. It's like, I'm going to draw a cube and we'll think of some magic widget later. Oh, shoot, we've run up against a deadline. We'll just leave the cube on the page. And now it's the Cosmic Cube.
It's a MacGuffin. Who cares?
They have a magic MacGuffin. The issue I have is it was used to power super weapons.
Yeah.
Now, if you have an infinite power source and you realize, wait a minute, I could use this to make a weapon, that makes sense. But in the movies, they had invented the weapons before they encountered this power source.
Yeah.
It's like, just I have,
waiting for the power source. Superpowered
sci-fi weapons. All we need is a magic cube. Oh, good. We found a magic cube.
Yeah.
I feel that was sort of the approach here, too. It's like, we have all of this neat technology. It's a good thing we found a King Kong magic rock.
Yeah. I feel like these kinds of universes where all of a sudden superheroes exist or all of a sudden giant monsters exist, it's just like a relief for mad scientists. Like, they thought I was mad to build a super weapon with no power source, but who's laughing now? So they emailed the power source back up to the surface, and
I would love to see a sad story about a mad scientist who invents, like, some kind of machine, and just the power source never comes up.
Yeah.
Just was like, yes, I will take over the world, and like 10 years later, well, I'm working at Arby's. Still waiting for that power source.
Dimon Bashir, his whole plot, in case you hadn't figured it out, was he was building Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
But he wasn't just building a giant robot. That would have been fine. You could have done it. But for some reason, he was like, I know what I'm going
to
do.
It needs to tie in psychically.
It needs to make...
a human brain, but also a monster.
Well, it needs to be evil so that it's okay to destroy it. It can't be a neutral creation. It has to be evil. And what we have done is, remember the closing credits sequence in Godzilla King of the Monsters was Charles Dance buying King Ghidorah's severed head.
Right.
Well, apparently in the interim, he sold it to Dimon Bashir. We do not explain that. Just Dimon Bashir has it now. And
Charles Dance is now very rich somewhere.
I guess so. He didn't care about being rich. He already had a lot of money. He wanted to actually change the world.
He's really rich. He's living in his high mansion with his spider terrarium.
I guess the thing is this. If you recall, Charles Dance's whole thing was he wanted to save the world from human excess and actually like fix the ecosystem. But as we saw in the closing credits in Godzilla King of the Monsters, the Titans are fixing the ecosystem, so he doesn't have a reason for the head that he bought anymore. So I guess I may as well sell it. I guess so. It's a little anticlimactic for his character, but whatever, it's fine. Dimon Bashir has it now, and they mention this. I don't know how Brian Tyree Henry fucking knows this, but he says, oh yeah, no, it's a King Ghidorah head. And as we all know, King Ghidorah, because his necks were so long, his heads had to communicate telepathically.
So there's psychic powers. Yeah. In the bones.
In the bone.
They're up to his brain. His brain would have
rotted, right? Certainly. Like, it's really forced.
Now, if they had, like, a gigantic monster brain and, like, a big blue tank fluid.
That's what I'm talking about.
Great. And
that would be fucking awesome.
And then there's, like, a little, chair next to it with a colander and somebody can sit down next to it and put it on their head. Like, that'd be great.
Well, because they're doing that anyway. Dr. Serizawa's son is, getting into, like, a cool kind of real steel kind of robot chamber and, like, got a headset on with, like, glowy tubes. And that's how he's controlling Mechagodzilla.
Tubes.
There's a scene where Mechagodzilla, in order to test Mechagodzilla out, they have him fight a skull crawler from Kong Skull Island, which they have now.
Sure.
In it for fun. Also, Julian Dennison, Millie Bobby Brown, and Brian Tyree Henry are now back in the Hong Kong facility, having traveled there in a cargo container. Sure. Whatever. They're there. Dimon Bashir gets his power source. They activate Mechagodzilla, and he's like, yes, I will save the world, and we will now be finally at the top of the food chain again. And then, because Mechagodzilla has King Ghidorah's brain, and I really wish they'd like delved into this a little bit more, Mechagodzilla becomes autonomous very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's King Ghidorah.
Uh-huh.
It's haunted by him, yeah. Or it's downloaded in his brain or something. But we never get that. We never get, like, a sense that Mechagodzilla has its own personality, or that it wants something, or that it wants to resume Ghidorah's plan to, like, destroy the Earth.
It's just an evil robot.
It's just an evil robot, but, like, why even make it King Ghidorah at that point? It could just have been an evil robot. It would have been fine.
I guess we did leave that loose end. We would always wonder what happened to it, so that's a clever way to incorporate it into the plot.
I just think you could have done more with it.
From a practical perspective.
I think it would have been cool. I think you'd have done more with it if it, like, had expressed more malevolence.
And this is a little bit more of, like, a nimble, spindly CGI version of Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, he doesn't trundle the way he used to.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the big... Because Godzilla's a little bit more nimble as well.
Yeah.
This one's, like, a little bit more like a robotic exoskeleton than an actual Mechagodzilla.
Yeah. So it breaks free. It kills Damian Bashir and Millie Bobby Brown and Julian Dennison and Brian Terry Henry. Like, oh, no. Is there something for us to do? And they're like, well, we could, like, hack Mechagodzilla. But we don't know how to do that, so they just pour water on a computer, and that's literally all they do to help the movie. They contribute nothing else.
It's not water; it's whiskey.
Who cares? It's liquid.
Well, you asked, like, why do we have the podcast character? Why do we have Millie Bobby Brown?
So liquid could be in a room
because he's an alcoholic, and if he wasn't an alcoholic, he wouldn't have had the liquid on him to break a computer.
You're telling me they don't have a water cooler in this office
building? No, I'm saying that alcoholism saved the day.
You're saying that if it was water, it wouldn't have done anything. Only booze.
Only booze did, yes. Destroy this.
That's why they had, like, no booze pictures next to all the computers. Careful, this is sensitive to booze.
And it had to be Wild Turkey, and he holds up the bottle with the label.
My point is this. We have those characters, and the only thing that they contribute to the entire narrative is to see King Ghidorah's head and then pour water on a computer, pour a liquid on a computer console. That's all they contribute to the story. We didn't really need them, is my point.
I don't have an issue with that. I think
you could have really streamlined the film, I think. I just think it's a little... It's got too many balls in the air, and I think it would be better if it had been a focus, but whatever. Anyway, but yeah, at this point, now that Mechagodzilla is up and running, Godzilla's like, oh, fuck that Mechagodzilla shit, not happy about that. And he's also aware that Kong is out and in Hollow Earth and messing around with that power source, because Godzilla goes to Hong Kong and starts shooting fire breath into the ground to burrow deep into it like he's a fuck. And that's fucking cool, actually. I'm just fine with that.
There's a lot of fucking cool in this movie.
There really is.
There is a certain kind of blockbuster filmmaking that is really reminiscent of sort of the origin of these kinds of pulp stories, which is like those 30s pulp adventures.
Yeah.
Where they were made for really cheap back in the 30s, but they felt kind of exciting for a little kid because those kinds of stories weren't being told in the A movies.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a little kid enjoyment, a kind of strange, energetic illogic to these kinds of movies. I feel like a lot of the more popular blockbusters of the day tend to eschew that feeling. They try to make it a little
almost
bit
like
more,
they're ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, like they don't want it to be sort of like playful for kids. They want it to be like a little bit more serious for like maybe a 14 and up crowd.
No, it's okay to take this seriously. No.
We don't have to. Yeah.
It's okay to do that sometimes, like, but remember, if that's everything, it's dull.
I remember when that movie Rogue One came out. It was a Star Wars picture. And a lot of the discourse around it was, I like Rogue One because I can finally take Star Wars seriously.
It puts the war back in, like, Star Wars. It felt like a war movie.
Yeah, it's like, well, first of all, if you weren't taking Star Wars seriously before, holy shit, because the world was overwhelmed by all of your Star Wars garbage. That, if that wasn't serious, I don't want to know what is. But that felt to me like almost less mature. This need to make things kind of gritty and adolescent.
Well, it's this desire to have things that we like, things for kids that we enjoyed as kids. We can't leave them there. We have to force them to grow up with us.
Yeah. When they're fundamentally childlike.
Yeah.
Not childish. Childlike.
And listen, sometimes that works. I think Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy is really, really cool. But it's also okay to admit that a guy in a bat costume is kind of ridiculous, and it's okay to treat that as ridiculous as it is. That's fine too. That's a perfectly good approach.
Adam Wingard understood that Godzilla didn't need to grow up with us, that it's actually a lot better for this series to stay with the more kid-friendly story.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's using, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and using a, you know, the cutting edge CGI special effects.
Yeah.
And everything looks fine in that regard, but there is a certain tone to it, a certain spirit that I appreciate greatly. And the fact that there's a lot of illogic with the characters, that the only plot reason we had was for these characters was just so that they could pour booze on a computer panel.
Yeah.
The fact that we're incorporating King Ghidorah's disembodied skull into the soul of a robot. It's like,
I'm not saying it's not cool.
I'm fine with all of that because Adam Wingard has the right spirit.
I just wish they'd done more with it. I'm not complaining that they brought in King Ghidorah's psychic skull to haunt Mechagodzilla.
No.
I'm saying go further. That's what I want.
I remember a Matt Groening comic where a little kid goes up to his dad and says, "Dad, what's the soul?" And the dad is like a little taken aback. It's like, your soul is like, well, some people believe that it's like connected to like maybe some spirit world or gods, or maybe it's the thing that makes, you know, it's your life force. It's the thing that makes you alive. That's your soul. And the kid's like listening to all of this and then comes back with, "Then why did the zombies sell their soul to Skullmaster?" And it's like... Like, we're coming at this from different levels.
Yeah. I'm aware. And that's fine. That's fine. But anyway, the last, like, half hour, 40 minutes of this movie, we're cutting to, like, all the Damien Bashir stuff. It's mostly Godzilla and Kong wailing on each other. And yeah, I'm fine with that.
If we work our way up to it,
yeah,
it's okay to spend a bit of a time with it.
And it's not like they saved it all for the end, too. We had a fight earlier on. We've had King Kong fight a bunch of dudes. Like, we've had adventure until the climax. But they know that this is why we're here. We're here to see King Kong and Godzilla really go to town. And I think they did a good play here because the first time they fought, Godzilla won handily. The second time they fight, when they're in Kong Kong... it's a fight, but King Kong does better. Yeah. He's able to win the day because he has that cool axe. It can absorb Godzilla's heat attacks, and he's able to like throw it at stuff. And he's like climbing on buildings, which you never really got to see him do.
This is in Hong Kong, by the way.
Yeah, it's in Hong Kong.
They emerged in Hong Kong, and now they're like crashing into buildings, knocking stuff over. There's no dust in the air, so the fight is not obscured. It's all lit by the neon of Hong Kong,
it's very kind of
visually dynamic.
It's very bright. Adam Wingard had a thing where he'd wanted the ending to take place, quote, in a synthwave-style futuristic city backdrop. And he said, quote, "My vision basically started there. How can we get these two monsters fighting on a synthwave album cover?" So it was all reverse engineered from a fight that looked exactly like this. That's what he wanted. And I think he did a good job. If you compare this to a movie I really, really like, and I think it does its own thing, but the neon fight in the first Pacific Rim, that is a movie with a lot more visual clutter than it needs.
Yeah.
And I still like that scene a lot. I still think it's really, really cool. But I think if Guillermo del Toro had exercised the visual restraint that Adam Wingard has. And I don't mean he doesn't put wacky shit on the camera. What I mean is he lets the camera linger. He lets the frame actually like show you a bunch of cool stuff all at once. He lets you drink it in.
Yeah.
I think Pacific Rim would have been even stronger. That's my biggest issue with
Pacific Rim is that this is ostensibly a fun film about robots fighting monsters. We don't get good glory shots of the monsters. The monsters have no identity.
Yeah.
The robots are introduced in a really cool way, but then they're like dispatched really quickly.
Yeah.
Like, we're put together this cool international team. Oh, no, they're dead.
Yeah.
Like, wait, no. you messed it up.
Yeah, you keep introducing cool stuff.
And then they're fighting like,
in
that night, in the rain, all that nonsense.
It is what it is. But this one is just a really glorious looking fight. But the fight continues. Godzilla gets the better of Kong, and Kong is dying. So, Alexander Skarsgård's character is like, "I know what we can do. We can use these UFOs that the company made as a defibrillator. You know, Like you do. And so he puts it on King Kong's chest, and he defibrillates King Kong. And I will say this much.
Like, that's really fun.
If it, there's a misconception in movies about a lot of things, how a lot of things work. For example, not the one I'm going to be talking about today, but the whole, like, you got to keep them on the phone for, like, as long as possible in order to get a trace.
Yeah.
That was true in the 70s when you had to actually track down, like, the junction,
tower,
you know?
The broadcast towers or whatever.
Yeah. Now, they know. Mm. You're on a cell phone. They can ping you real fucking fast. There's a GPS on that thing. Like, that's not the issue it used to be. But we keep clinging to it because it leads to more drama.
Right.
Right? Same thing with defibrillators, where we use defibrillators. Oh, no, they're dead. Defibrillate. Boom. Ha-ha.
They'll restart their heart.
It doesn't work if they're already dead. That's the thing about defibrillators. What it does is it resets the rhythm of your heart. So that all, so it's kind of just like, you know, boom. Oh, sorry. I don't know what I was doing. Let me get back to pumping. Ba-bum. 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 Sorry about that. Ba-bum. Ba-bum. That's your heart. They use it before King Kong dies. So even though this is using a UFO as a defibrillator, it's actually one of the more accurate defibrillator scenes I've seen in a movie.
Well, what I wanted to see is something that they don't always do in the movies is you need like a conductive putty.
Yeah.
Like a gel that they put on people.
Yeah, otherwise you're just going to burn them.
Yeah. The first movie I saw do that was Reanimator.
Yep.
Where they actually like put the putty on. Reanimator doesn't do anything else right, but at, no, at least had the,
it's all sci-fi nonsense,
had the gel on the defibrillator paddle.
Someone knew what they were talking
Wouldn't
about.
Wouldn't it have been keen if Adam Wingard thought to like fly the machine into like some kind of glop pool or something?
There's a chocolate factory over here. I'll just dip it in chocolate whatever it is. And put it over here.
It's a lot of like some kind of like thickening agent. We can fly in there.
Oh good. The Nickelodeon GAC Museum. It's right here. It's right here in Hong Kong on a tour. You know how much they love GAC.
I was trying to think of like what kind of like major corporate entity could have bought a tie-in with this movie.
I don't know. Whoever makes Vaseline.
There you go. The Vaseline people.
Thank God Vaseline saved.
Oh, there's a Vaseline factory. We have to fly through it and they burst out and they're all gloppy and splop right.
So anyway, Mechagodzilla is kicking the shit out of Godzilla and King Kong is defibrillated back to life. And right when Mechagodzilla is about to do Godzilla's own move, where he pulls open Godzilla's mouth and he's going to shoot fire into Godzilla. My Godzilla like, oh, is this what that was like? Oh, I'm an asshole. And then King Kong, just before Mechagodzilla fires, axe in Mechagodzilla's back, it fires off into the sky, and there's like a moment. I love, there's just a little bit of storytelling, because again, Godzilla isn't treated as a character very often.
Yeah.
There's just a little bit of storytelling when Godzilla sees King Kong save his life, and he's like, I misjudged you. It's a little thing, but you can just tell Godzilla's like...
I don't know how much... I know Kong was done, at least in Kong Skull Island, with motion capture. I think he's just animated in this.
No, I think they still did some motion capture.
There's still some actors there. Yeah. I don't know if there's any motion capture with Godzilla, though.
I think there is. But regardless, it's not much. But they give him just a little bit like, I was wrong.
We don't have that sort of like... the new Planet of the Apes movies, which they give the characters like really expressive faces so they can talk.
Yeah.
They don't have that kind of expressiveness.
Like King Kong
movie
is pretty expressive, and he'll be more expressive in Godzilla Godzilla X Kong. Mm. But yeah, Godzilla is just not very expressive in these. But we do get that moment where he's like, I was wrong. And then they team up and they beat the shit out of Mechagodzilla. And everyone's like, yay! And then all the human characters are like, hey, we're in the movie. And everyone's like, yeah, did we come to any conclusion or have an arc? No.
No.
Oh, but we're here and we're all in the same place and we're hugging? Yeah, that kind of feels like an ending. And they're like, great. And then all of a sudden
Adam Wingard says, hey, he turns to the audience, looks us right in the eyes and said, what, you wanted this to be about something?
Yeah, what do we do?
So, this is a movie about monsters wailing on each other. There's a robot dinosaur. What do you want?
We defeated the robot dinosaur, and everyone's like, great. And then all of a sudden, everyone looks up and they realize, oh, right, Godzilla and Kong are still here. What are they going to do? And they're kind of sizing each other up.
They kind of like pout each other's
looking each other in the eye. And then Godzilla,
I respect you.
Yeah.
Stay the fuck off my turf.
Yeah.
We don't have a beef. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
And Godzilla just walks away into the sunset, trundles, bomb, ba bomb, bomb. And Kong is like, damn right. And Godzilla's like, damn right.
Scoopy, yeah.
Yeah. We're cool. And then this one.
Godzilla X Kong. Damn Skippy.
And then that's the end. There isn't even like a post-credit sequence. It's just King Kong is now living in the Hollow Earth. Mm-hmm. And they've got like a research station there to keep an eye on him. And King Kong's like, boy, this Hollow Earth place is nice. Yeah. I can really stretch my legs. Credits.
And Godzilla's on the surface.
Yeah.
Kong's underneath.
Yeah.
All is right with the world.
All is right.
You finally did it. They nailed it this time.
They got the formula. I still think the story is more cluttered than it needs to be. And I think Godzilla X Kong actually like winnows itself down to the essentials better.
Yeah.
And when we get to that in a couple of episodes, it'll be our last episode for a while. I'll rewatch it, but I remember watching it in theaters going, They really didn't waste our time with a bunch of extraneous characters in that movie, and I was grateful for that. That's something the American legendary movies, even the Roland Emmerich movie, just kept filling time with subplots about human characters, and it's fine if there's one or even two. Four? Do we need four? No.
I actually got to write up an interview recently with Dean Devlin, who was co-writer of the 98 movie.
Yeah, and he also wrote Independence Day and Stargate.
Co-wrote most movies with Roland Emmerich, at least for a while.
He also directed Geostorm, which is fucking awesome.
Geostorm is a reasonably priced sedan, the Geostorm. He said, I looked back over that movie and... Why did we spend so much time with all those characters? We're introduced to the Maria Petillo character in that movie.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
That's when, Godzilla should be nigh at that point.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we don't need to spend, 90 to 100 minutes before we get to the monster mayhem.
We don't need more than one scene of her boss being a dick.
Yeah.
She has a dick of a boss. We're done now. We don't need to keep cutting back to him. He's done.
An interesting subplot. We're
good. Yeah.
Dean Devlin even said, no, there were too many characters. We spent too much time on the characters. We didn't know what they were, or if they were supposed to be comic. Their stories weren't interesting. What were we doing?
That whole production was pretty rushed, actually, by the time they got to it. So, and here, it's also done very, very quickly. They started making it like around the time or even before King of the Monsters was even in theaters.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a miracle it came out as good as it did.
Yeah.
And it came out at a time when, COVID had still really ravaged the box office. And
a lot of theaters, they were open, but not a lot of people were going.
It was released in theaters and HBO Max simultaneously.
And I watched it at home.
I did too.
I did not see it in theaters.
I did too. I was still being very, very careful and trying to, stay inside as much as I could because I was trying to be protected with my family and my own health, etc. But... In any case, it was one of the first films in theaters to do damn good box office, despite also opening on HBO Max. And even though I'm sure it would have made more money in another era, it did turn a profit. Like, it actually was successful. King of the Monsters barely justified its own existence financially, but Godzilla vs. Kong did really good. And so that gave them the confidence they needed to push forward, and I'm glad they did, because yes, they finally cracked the code. They've got it down. This is what we want. And I think they're going to continue that in Godzilla X Kong, and I'm very happy with that. One last little bit of trivia I learned about this movie is, speaking of too many characters, they cut some out.
Well, I know, Zhang Ziyi was supposed to come back.
She was in the movie. They cut her scenes. Like, they were going to bring her back. I don't know where she would have fit in.
Yeah. I
don't miss her.
I
think she's a great actor, but
I'm okay with if there's many characters in a movie, but they travel in groups.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team of characters, but they're always at headquarters. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Here's a group of characters, but they're investigating a tunnel, but they're all together at all times.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I feel like this movie does adhere to that principle a little bit.
Yeah.
They're not constantly splitting off and finding other and switching teams.
If Brian Tyree Henry, Julian Dennison, and Millie Bobby Brown had gone off and split up at any point, then it would have been ridiculous.
Exactly. That would be too much. They're always together.
Yeah.
Because they need people to talk to.
They need people to explain things and discover
these neat things and have conversations about them.
There's a technique we have in writing. It's called dovetailing. It's where you take two disparate elements and in order to make each of them stronger, you just combine them. So, if you have two characters in your script, One is the protagonist's funny next-door neighbor, and the other is the protagonist's lawyer. Just make the neighbor a lawyer. You've given that character more to do. They're more important to the story. It fleshes them out a bit, so they're funny and they're a lawyer. Okay, that's kind of a multifaceted individual. It's a trick that you use to streamline the film, but also make individual elements stronger. But that doesn't mean you should always remove characters from the story, and indeed, sometimes having a lot of characters is valuable. I think of something like My Best Friend's Wedding is a good example of this, where Julia Roberts, her best friend, is getting married, and she's jealous because she was like, oh, I always figured we'd end up together eventually. So she's going to sabotage the wedding, and the wedding couldn't just be Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz eloping in Vegas. Hmm. It really wouldn't function. So she has a huge extended family, and that family becomes its own character, like as a group.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to let them down. So you feel bad. No, don't ruin the wedding. They're nice, you know? Or like While You Were Sleeping is another example of this, where Sandra Bullock accidentally says that she's engaged to a guy who's in a coma.
Yeah.
And
she kind of like idly says it to herself, and someone overhears her.
Well, what happens is she had a crush on this guy, and she
worked in
a train station booth.
She sold this guy his tickets.
Yeah, he fell on the tracks. She saved him, but he was in a coma, and they wouldn't let her see him because she wasn't family. And so she was just going to do a white lie, say no, we were dating, and one of the family members overhears that and they're like, oh no, you must have been dating. And now she's stuck with this lie, and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. But she gets involved with the family, and the extended family makes her feel at home, makes her feel less lonely. You need the extra characters in a case like this. I don't think you need all that many scientists in this movie. Like, in Godzilla King of the Monsters, did we need Bradley Whitford and Zhang Ziyi and all those? Do we need all of them and Sally Hawkins? I mean, it's good actors.
They could have cut Kyle Chandler from this movie.
They really... Here's what you do. Millie Bobby Brown, she's young, but I would buy her as a first-year student in college.
Or don't address it. Just she's a kid who's out there on her own, and we don't need to think about that.
Think of how many
Saturday morning cartoons. I'm leaving home, and I'm going to live with Mr. T. I'll be one of his gymnast warriors. Like, these things didn't make any fucking sense.
The difference is that we hadn't met their parents, and this one we had.
I guess
so. So the question is, you do at least want to address, hey, whatever happened to Kyle Chandler? Hmm. And I don't know. Say he died. I don't care. Like, he was having a celebratory dinner after Godzilla King of the Monsters, and he got cocky, and he ordered the blowfish, and they didn't cut it right, and he died. And it was very, very sad, but it was very, very sudden. It was okay, and Millie Bobby Brown became like an emancipated minor because she saved the world, and everything's fine. Mm. Makes about as much sense as anything else in this movie. Yeah. Anyway, that's Godzilla vs. Kong. It's a hell of a lot of fun. I think it's got some bloat on it, but I think it's really, really good.
There is a little bit of bloat on it, but the spirit is there. Yeah. And I appreciate blockbuster movies that feel like old-fashioned Saturday serials.
Yeah.
I feel that way about some of the latter-day Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
Like we're just going to have a lot of really nonsensical, fun set pieces. Mm-hmm. With barely a story you don't really care about in between.
Yeah.
I felt that way about this. Okay, we're going to set all this stuff up. Yeah, we know why you're here.
Yeah.
Well, we're just buying our time.
People think that film critics want every movie to be rich and complicated. We don't.
We want every movie to be enjoyable.
We want it to be good on its own terms. And every movie should be the same. Yeah. If you're making a big, silly monster fight movie, don't pretend it's something else.
Make a really good big silly monster fight movie.
And if you do pretend it's something else, you better make that really, really good. Otherwise, we're going to wonder why you didn't just lean into how silly it was.
Yeah.
So this is a case where they got the tone right. And the tone is something that Americans have really struggled with these giant monster movies. Mm-hmm. And they got it right here.
Yeah.
That's the thing that makes this movie work more than anything else.
So I think this is the best of all the American Godzilla films.
I will, when I revisit Godzilla X Kong, I'll get back to you on that. Okay. Because if I were to say now, having only seen Godzilla X Kong the one time in theaters, pretty recently, but still, I would say I like Godzilla X Kong better.
Okay.
I think, again, I think it is, it doesn't have all the fatty chunks on it. Yeah. It's just the lean beef. It's everything you just want. It's all the nutrients. And it's fun. It's got some really good character in it. Like, you get character from Godzilla and Kong. Mm-hmm. I like that movie a lot.
I'll say it this way. I feel like both are, like, plates of delicious food. This is a sandwich. This one, Godzilla vs. Kong, is a sandwich. So you can, like, pick it up and eat it.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, everything you need and a nice, well-rounded bite.
Yeah.
Godzilla X Kong, they took away the bread. So now you kind of have to, like, still tasty, but you kind of have to, like, pick up these shambles from inside the sandwich.
You know, you can actually just buy sandwiches without bread. They, like, put it in lettuce and stuff, and it's really delicious and good for you.
Yeah, it doesn't have the lettuce either. Like, they just forgot the bun.
Okay, it's so like, that's like a bowl. Eating... It's like a bowl of food.
Yeah, and you have to pick it up with your hands. They didn't give you a fork. The point is it's sloppy. It's a little sloppy. It's a strained metaphor, but I'm sticking by it.
Okay, fine.
So, strained simile.
Well, we'll get to that in two more episodes, but the next episode of Thank Godzilla, It's Friday, it's for the only Godzilla movie that has ever won an Academy Award. Mm. And it won it this year. It's Godzilla Minus One. We're having a bit of trouble. I'm going to warn you right now. We're having a little bit of trouble tracking down, like, a legal copy of it because it still hasn't been officially released in America yet on home video.
But we have both seen it kind of recently.
We have both seen it kind of recently, and if we have to do it,
we'll just go off our memory.
Our ideal is to be able to watch it again and you know, really dive deep into it.
Yeah.
So we're going to do it. We're going to try to track down a proper copy of it again, legally. It might delay the episode a little, but we're going to try to avoid that. So just a heads up in case, this will probably only affect the Patreon, but our Patreon over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, you can get episodes of Thank Godzilla It's Friday 1 week early. Mm-hmm. There's only two left to get 1 week early, but by God, you'll get them a week early. We release them there weekly, and all of our new episodes of all of our podcasts are ad free. So I want to thank all of our Patreon subscribers for keeping the show going. We couldn't do this without you. And at different tiers, we have a lot of additional podcast material. We've got hundreds of episodes of our Star Trek podcast for you to dig into. We have a whole bunch of commentary tracks. We have a whole giant backlog of podcasts dedicated to every film ever nominated for Best Picture and every film ever nominated for Best International Feature, which are ongoing projects that we're doing on our Patreon page. So, thank you. And again, people have been asking, what's next? We know what's next, actually.
We figured it out, but we'll leave it a surprise.
We'll announce it in a couple of weeks, and we may take a week off, just because it's been kind of a long journey, after we do Godzilla X Kong. And of course, whenever there's a new Godzilla movie that comes out, we will make an addendum, a new episode. Mm-hmm. We have plans. We have a couple of plans, actually. So, stay tuned. We'll make those announcements when the time comes. Up next is Godzilla Minus One, and I love that movie, so I'm very excited to talk about it, and it's going to be a real treat. So thank you for listening. If you want to talk to us about anything in particular, you can. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Feel free to ask us questions, take us to task. Do you disagree with something? Do you have some trivia to share? Whatever you want. Our email is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail. Whitney, what is our P.O. box?
Send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes, and we're on the social medias. I'm at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibel.
And until next time, RAR Minus One.